just before I guided meditation, I'd like to just offer a few prefatory comments to that. So this was, and the real wrap-up will come after, but so just a few comments, and then guided meditation, and then a wrap-up, and then, we'll do the rest. But it may occur to you while you are thinking about or pondering this ineffable experience of pristine awareness, and you recognize how startling this idea is that it is beyond space and time, and that because it is beyond time or in the fourth time, that it doesn't make sense to talk about causality, because causality always infers something happening as a cause before the result. And so it's said that in this ineffable experience of pristine awareness, there is no karma, or karma is irrelevant. Or, you know, so karma, it's said, is what produces. So for many, many years, and I have, for a while, this was a working title for a book called Why This Now? And, you know, for me, this, any explanation of the operations of the mind always had to explain or answer this question. Why does this particular appearance arise at this particular moment? So the answer for that in samsara is karma. You know, so you have this, the ground, the relative ground of substrate, and it is just fizzing with this energy that Alan calls prana. And so you have space filled with prana, and this is the wild proposition that prana actually is the material cause of all the appearances that we experience in samsara. And then the cooperative condition, so what is it that actually turns into the appearances? It is energy that is temporarily crystallized in particular forms of our experience that we see as appearances or experience as appearances. And then the cooperative condition, why the answer to why this particular appearance or this crystallization of prana is karma. So it is all the propensities, all the habits. It is just what, you know, is the reason that this happens right now. But that doesn't operate in pristine awareness or primordial consciousness, this non-dual pristine awareness and the absolute space of phenomena. So you have when you're resting there in non-meditation, you are experiencing all of these appearances arise as spontaneous actualization. So if you ask why this appearance then is spontaneously actualizing now, what is the answer to that? Is it, does not compute? Is it does not compute? As it is, you know, with, so if existence and non-existence doesn't compute, the answer to why this now, it would make sense, doesn't compute also. So maybe we should just stop asking that. But even though it may not make sense to ask the question, there is an answer. And that is, Yangtang Rinpoche gave us the answer yesterday in those pointing out instructions. So why is it? What is it that propels spontaneous actualization? Why in space isn't it just nothing? Why does anything manifest? Why is there something rather than nothing? Interesting thought. In physics also, I read a book on that. Why is there something rather than nothing, or something like that? It was really fascinating. A lot of it over my head, but fascinating to ponder the many explanations of that. But why is there something rather than nothing in our own experience? And so Yangtang Rinpoche said that the essential nature of primordial consciousness is emptiness. The luminous nature of primordial consciousness is Sambhogakaya. So you have Dharmakaya and Sambhogakaya, the emptiness and the luminosity, and these two are non-dual. So you have, and the luminous aspect, the luminous manifestation of emptiness, or the manifest nature of emptiness, is luminosity, and then the essential nature of luminosity is emptiness. So you have these two in this non-dual experience. But there are three bodies of a Buddha rather than two, right? There's the Nirmanakaya. And what did he say is the Nirmanakaya? It's compassion. So why, if you ask the question that doesn't have an answer, but there is an answer, it is compassion, is the reason for spontaneous actualization. And why this now? Why this particular spontaneous actualization? And so another way of so these are the three bodies of a Buddha, Dharmakaya, Sambhogakaya, and Nirmanakaya. And Nirmanakaya, emanation, is compassion. And in other places, other teachers or other masters have said all of the appearances are Nirmanakaya. So all of the appearances that are appearing while you are resting in pristine awareness are manifestations of compassion. They're the third body, the Nirmanakaya. And another way that sometimes this is phrased is that the essential nature of primordial consciousness is emptiness. The manifest nature of primordial consciousness is luminosity, and that the pervasive nature of primordial consciousness is compassion. And in the Mahamudra text, Spacious Path to Freedom, there is a section hidden at the end of non-meditation that describes that Gyatro Rinpoche and Karma Chagme are describing this particular subject. Why does anything manifest? And then the answer is compassion. So this is really the non-abiding nirvana of a Buddha. Because they are not content to just rest in the peace of nirvana, sublime peace, because all of these appearances are not a problem to them. My mental afflictions are not a problem for a Buddha that knows my mind. But out of compassion, what they might have a response to my mental affliction out of compassion. So some appearance arises in the primordial consciousness of a Buddha, and it may somehow become manifest in my experience, you know, as something that's beneficial to me. So there's just that. Because the question often comes in the Dzogchen, you know, when we do a Dzogchen presentation and we're just dealing with shamatha, vipassana, some people feel like this is awfully self-referential, isn't it? You know, just working with my mind, you know, and my laxity, my excitation. You know, what about the big mission? And so the whole flow of practice in Dzogchen is that the quickest way, it's not that relative bodhicitta or the kind of compassion that is concerned about others is not addressed or not still the whole point of doing the practice. But it is just that in the experience of these generations of masters, you know, beginning with Padmasambhava, Vimalamitra, Garbh Dorje, that the quickest way to get to this uncontrived experience of relative bodhicitta is by way of ultimate bodhicitta. And so you really focus, and your motivation for doing the whole practice is imbued with your compassion, but you get to pristine awareness as quickly as possible, because out of pristine awareness then compassion, relative compassion, just flows naturally, unimpeded, as all appearances. So, and then again, it is just so helpful to recall the comment of His Holiness that once you get a taste of nirvana, you know, of the non-conceptuality, luminosity, and bliss, you know, that's not even quite nirvana, but it's pretty, you know, it's a real close facsimile of, you could say, abiding nirvana. Not the non-abiding, but the abiding nirvana. And once you get that taste, then your compassion just explodes. You get a taste of real wisdom, and compassion explodes, because you realize that it really is possible for you to eliminate suffering irreversibly from your own mind. And then if you can do it, just as this person brought up in the question last night, is a Buddha amused by our suffering? I'm paraphrasing now, but by samsara. And I think, no, the answer is they have a compassionate, heartfelt, compassion to do everything that they possibly can to eliminate suffering, because they realize there's no need for it. This is all self-inflicted because are based on our delusion. So, you know, this practice, really the whole point that we're doing this is because of compassion. And then when we arrive at our goal, compassion is the fruit as well. So rather than being ostensibly the path, as it is in the bodhicitta, or the path of the bodhisattva, where it actually is, bodhicitta is the nirlenga gyur, or the primary cause of the omniscience of a Buddha. Because the omniscience is already there, you could say, in primordial consciousness, you don't take that as the explicit path, as in the new translation schools. So, and then just, so there's that. And then Dzogchen really reveals this view of the world to us, in which all there is not a universe, but there is a multiverse. So we are all the center of our own universe. And so how many universes are there? Well, there is one for each sentient being. And so does that then lead to solipsism, or just being, are we hermetically sealed in the center of our own mandalas? Because all of my perception of the world is so conditioned by my karma and my experience of the world, and all of the causes and conditions that went into producing my psyche, that it's, you know, there. But we share a lot of features. Our worlds and our experience share a lot of features. You know, we all speak English. We were all, I think, born in the United States. You know, we all have, you know, we're either male or female. I think, or, you know, all of these things. And then we have common experiences. We have shared cultural highlights, you know, throughout our lives, etc. So we have a lot of, we all were taught by our mothers that this is white, Dougie. Can you say white? White. Oh, yes. This is blue. Can you say blue? You know, this is how our common experience is created through this kind of education, reinforcement, and then interaction with our environment. So there are a lot of similarities in each of our mandalas, this shared karma, but we each are perceiving from the center of our own mandalas. It makes total sense, doesn't it? So the question then is, are we hermetically sealed in these bubbles of our my universe? And if they were hermetically sealed, that would be pretty close to a definition of self-existence, because they wouldn't be able to influence each other or be influenced. They wouldn't be a cause or they wouldn't be a result. But we are, the thing about these cells, probably that's more like what we are cells rather than, you know, something like that, but it's pretty much ends up being the same idea. But these are permeable membranes, and we are constantly influencing each other, and we're kind of bathed in the overall system of each other's influence. And so we are living in this world that we are really dynamically interdependent on each other, and we're constantly communicating with each other. And so we become causes for each other, and then we are also the result of all of the myriad interactions that we have, not only with the environment, but with each other's mandalas. So recognizing that, then, when we see this dynamic interaction, it really leads us to, first, when we think, I want to be a cause of ultimate happiness for all beings. So we go home with that aspiration, you know, and we put it on our refrigerator. You know, we get a refrigerator magnet and we put that there, and that feels like it's done now because I put it on my refrigerator. Took care of that, you know. Now I am a bodhisattva. And then we become mentally afflicted. And we don't take responsible for our mental affliction. And what is the responsibility? You know, so what is the point, or what is the advice of Shantideva? This was Chogyam Trungpa's advice also. When you become angry, don't express it. But don't suppress it either. You know, so there aren't, but luckily those aren't the only two choices. But the point is that when we are motivated by compassion, one of the first practical aspects is that we have to take responsibility for our own emotional lives. And because of this dynamic interaction of the mandalas, we come to recognize, as emotional research has just in the last decade or so, about the social nature of emotions and the fact of what Daniel Goleman, anyway, calls emotional contagion. And so we have to recognize that our mental afflictions are not our private affairs. We think they are. Don't they? We think that my anger, my stubbornness, or that's maybe not a mental affliction, but my depression, my hostility, my craving, this is all something I can conceal from everybody else, but no, and nobody knows what's really going on in my mind. Well, people don't really know exactly what you're thinking, but the whole point of emotion, the whole adaptive purpose, is communication. And instant nonverbal communication. So people get what's going on in your emotional system. And this can be beneficial or it can be really harmful to other people. And the epidemiological research of the last decade is really pretty shocking. And Richard Davidson includes some of this in his book, The Emotional Life of the Brain. But the research shows that in toxic emotional environments, the people who are the receivers of this toxicity are getting a risk factor for all of the major health concerns, everything from diabetes to heart disease to coronary disease, whatever, you know, all of the ones that we really care about, that we have all of these big health plans for. Emotional living in or working really in a toxic relationship has the same risk factor as smoking, overweight, being overweight, I guess diabetes also, but all of the risk factors that we're so concerned about. So when we realize this, how the impact that we have on other people's mental and physical health, it really demands, as a bodhisattva, that we begin to take responsibility for our own states of mind. So with that being said, let's meditate. Oh, one more thing. Just so that I don't have to explicitly explain this in the meditation. So this will be a meditation on compassion. And so in the Four Immeasurables, then there is this movement or progression, and Lama Allen really teaches the whole progression in 8-week retreat. Last year it was over and over and over again. Every morning session for 2 months was some variation of the Four Immeasurables. And so it starts off with this aspiration. You know, how wonderful it would be if all beings had happiness, if all beings were and its causes, and were free from suffering and its causes, had equanimity and its causes, on and on. How wonderful it would be. And then you progress through the stages until you reach the point where, that would be really nice. And you know what? I'm going to make it happen. I'm going to take personal responsibility to make sure that all beings have happiness and its causes. I'm going to take personal responsibility to make sure that all people are free from suffering and its causes. So you have to just ask then, is that megalomania? Really, who are we? Who is this I that could possibly take on that kind of task and think that this is anything other than delusion? You know, that I could possibly influence people and their happiness in their mandalas. Who is this I? So that's the basic question. Who is this I that we're talking about? And this is the I that becomes more and more familiar as you begin doing guru yoga. You know, who is your guru? Is it this person who is sitting in front of you, in my case, from California, a few years older than me, sometimes cranky, oftentimes just really just dazzlingly brilliant, always inspiring, you know? Who is this? You know, do I have a memory of his crankiness and sometime when he was cranky with me? And do I paste my lama on top of that memory then? What is the basis of designation? Well, you quickly realize that if you want to get benefit out of the relationship, you don't label your guru on a sentient being or the manifestations of a sentient being. You choose pristine awareness. And so my lama's pristine awareness is my guru because, you know, he has pristine awareness, and he is a lot more in touch with it than any other being that I know, you know, and definitely including me. And so then we just continue to expand the sphere of our projection of what is the basis of designation. And then people who are Vajra siblings, the second uncommon preliminary, we begin to see our Vajra siblings, we relate to them as pristine awareness. Why is that? Because we all share this very similar worldview. We all have the same aspiration. We have so much in common. If I can't see these people, you know, and relate to them as pristine awareness, how can I see the whole world that way? But then we keep expanding as we get comfortable. My guru, my Vajra siblings, and then finally, the whole world, you know, we see that way. So who is this I then that is going to be a cause of happiness for all the world? Well, it's not the body, speech, and mind of a sentient being. You know that. So it forces you, by making this audacious statement, that I am going to do it myself, I'm going to take responsibility. It forces you then to recognize that the I that you are, what is the basis of designation of that I that actually is capable of that? There's only one possibility. Primordial consciousness. So let's meditate. Begin by settling the body, speech, and mind in their natural states. This natural state of the body, speech, and mind allows you access to intuition. To messages from and answers to questions from primordial consciousness, from your pristine awareness. And this is the source of imagination, of imagining all possibilities. It's not that these are unreal, these possibilities, but they're just not manifest yet. So begin with yourself, with this heartfelt desire. How wonderful it would be if I knew happiness and its causes. And I was free from all suffering and its causes. sometimes we can have a perverted view of ourselves, thinking that we're somehow not worthy of that. We're incapable of. So we begin with ourselves. And on the inhalation, arouse that heartfelt aspiration of loving kindness and compassion for yourself. How wonderful it would be if I knew genuine happiness and its causes and was free from suffering and its causes. And visualize your own pristine awareness as an orb of radiant light at your heart chakra, about the size of a pearl. And on the inhalation, arouse that aspiration and on the exhalation, allow the radiance of your pristine awareness to flood your entire body with light, saturating every cell, eliminating all of the obstacles and the obscurations that veil genuine happiness and create suffering. And just practice on the breath. On the inhale, arouse the aspiration. And on the exhale, allow your pristine awareness to deliver. And then feel that this has become true. Your everyday reality now is genuine happiness, freedom from suffering, moment to moment. And then expand the sphere of concern, because this wouldn't have happened for you if you didn't care. Expand the sphere of your concern from yourself to someone you feel close to you, someone you feel a natural affection for. And view this person clearly. Because you know them so well, you know their aspirations for happiness. You know their frustration with the suffering that they're experiencing. But your care doesn't have to be manufactured for this person or fabricated. You feel this natural wish for them to be free from suffering and to have genuine happiness. Your own pristine awareness can never be polluted by suffering, because you know what causes suffering. And there is no delusion in this pristine awareness. So on the inhalation, inhale the suffering of this person you care so much about and draw it out of their body as a dark cloud. And inhale it to the pristine awareness at your heart where it is destroyed like a collision of matter and antimatter. And then on the exhalation, breathe out the radiance of your pristine awareness as a luminous beam, striking them in the heart, delivering all of the happiness that they long for and the causes of happiness. And now expand the sphere of concern again to a stranger. Somebody that you see that you don't know. A face comes to mind. This person has the same desire for happiness that I have and my loved one has, and are just as worthy of happiness. Why shouldn't I care about their suffering just as much as my own? And so arouse the aspiration. You can intuit their desire for happiness. You can intuit their suffering. Arouse the aspiration. May you be free from suffering and may you know genuine happiness. How wonderful it would be if you, like me, had it. May it be so. I myself will make it so. And on the inhalation, draw the suffering out of their bodies and inhale it to your own pristine awareness at the heart. And then exhale the radiance of your pristine awareness, striking them in the heart and delivering the genuine happiness and its causes that they long for. And now bring to mind somebody that you have a problem with. You could call them an enemy. You could call them an antagonist, a pain in the butt, somebody who may even wish you harm. This person, like you, like your loved one, wishes for happiness. But they act out of delusion, out of mental affliction. And perhaps they're even very powerful people who, because of their power, can magnify the problems, the pain caused by their mental afflictions. this person like you wants to be happy and free. May it be so. This is the only way we're going to heal the polarizations that are ripping our human family apart. How wonderful it would be, arouse the aspiration, and I will myself will make it so. And on the inhalation, draw out the suffering from this antagonist and take it into yourself willingly, because you know that it cannot harm you. And it's destroyed at your heart in your pristine awareness. And breathe out the happiness that this person longs for and its causes, the wisdom that produces the causes. And now you know that you have it in yourself to be a cause of happiness and a cause of freedom from suffering for not only yourself and your loved ones, but people you don't even know and people who may wish you harm. So you know that you can be a cause of genuine happiness and freedom from suffering for all sentient beings. Who are these sentient beings? All of them. What does it mean? How do you visualize them? Is it some mass of human likes or conscious beings disappearing over the horizon? Lama Allen says, just rest with an open, receptive mind, with this aspiration to be a cause of happiness, cause of freedom, and whoever comes to mind, friend, enemy, stranger, another species, let that be the icon for all sentient beings. And wish this person or this being freedom from happiness and determine that you yourself will do it. And now give up the visualization. And simply rest in this pristine awareness. Viewing all appearances in the center of your mandala when viewed from pristine awareness as pure appearances. Samsara and Nirvana, equally pure as being the creative display of this non-dual pristine awareness and the ultimate space of phenomena, all arising due to the force of compassion. So we'll take a break and come back at 11:02.